is Serene Kurka and I welcome you cordially to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing and music, and nowadays, and since many years, I have been singing lots of contemporary experimental music and I also do performance. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurka.de. And I also welcome you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I talk about themes all around contemporary music. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and I'm happy to bring you the human beings out of this new music world closer. I'm cooperating with the NMZ Neue Musikzeitung. And in today's episode, I'm talking to the string quartet, RDT Quartet. We have met at Rainy Days in Luxembourg, and this is also part of the interviewed series I do for Rainy Days Philharmonie Luxembourg. And I have talked to three of the members of the RDT Quartet. And now let's enjoy the interview with the RDT Quartet.
Hello, hello RDT Quartet. We're sitting here in Luxembourg at the Philharmonie at the festival Rainy Days. And I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. And well, today I have three of you here, Erwin Adidi, Ashat Sarkisyan and Ralph Ehlers. And I first would like to know from each of you, how did you find your way into this new and experimental music?
Far too long and complicated a story. It started many years ago when I was a baby in a cot and a radio set and short waves. And we got to hear eventually.
Okay.
That's the short version.
Well, I since I have told the shortest version of this story ever, maybe I'll compensate by telling the longest ever of mine.
Okay.
It basically all started with old... Well, actually, not the oldest, the second improved edition of the music encyclopedia by the Soviet publisher Sovetskaya Muzika. And the most interesting thing in that whole very big book for me were articles that explained some of the contemporary composition techniques and just the notation, like there were examples of notation, something that I hadn't seen before and I had still absolutely no idea what it would sound like because it was like, you know, back in the Soviets in the 80s. And so as soon as I got to Europe in the 90s and had access to recordings and like, you know, finding out what that music would actually sound like, I spent more time in the library listening to that than practicing the violin. And pretty soon after that, like, the new music guy stamp was all over my forehead, and it kind of took off from there.
And when you read this in this book, did you try it out or figure out what?
Oh no, there were like kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't know how to.
Okay, interesting. Wow.
Interesting. I had never heard that story. So something new.
It could have been shorter.
After 20 years. my journey into contemporary music was much less exciting. Well, exciting for me, but I was never kind of... I didn't know about contemporary music for a long time. I studied classical music, you know, played in a classical quartet. And then I started playing contemporary music, started really liking it, and I... really enjoyed it. It was quite good at it as well. And I started getting more and more interested in it, partly also because, you know, the viola repertoire doesn't have that much enough classical music to play with. There's many more contemporary music pieces. It is much more interesting for the instrument. And then you know, once you start getting to know this music, it's just kind of, it's you can't stop loving it. And it's just, you know, it's just so interesting and so nice. So that was my journey kind of through, a little bit more through, actually through chamber music. Chamber music, small groups, started playing in ensembles, contemporary music ensembles, like Ensemble Day in Austria as well. Sinfonietta, I played a little bit in London, and then finally I landed in the Aditi Quartet.
Awesome, awesome.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, and your quartet is now 50 years old, which is a long time period. It's just amazing that you do music for such a long time. So I guess this is a question for you, Irvine. How did you get to start this quartet and why?
My name's Irvin, by the way.
Irvin.
My mother misspelled it, but I forgave her a long time ago.
Do you forgive me too?
I forgive you too.
Thank you.
So let's knock the E off. How did I what? What was the question?
How did you start this ensemble and why?
Well, it was easy. I had the opportunity at the Royal Academy of Music. They were giving a prize to Penderecki, and they wanted some music for the ceremony. And as my colleague had new music stamped on his head, I certainly did, because by that time, studying in the Royal Academy, I was, I don't know, 18, been there 3 years, or a bit older, 19, can't remember exactly. And I'd already met Stockhausen, I'd already met Ligeti, I'd already met Xenakis, I'd already met Messiaen, and was into their music. So they asked me to get together some music for Penderecki, which I did. One of the pieces was a quartet, and there we go. Our Aditi Quartet was formed. There was an agent at the concert who said, oh, I like what you're doing, perhaps I can use you in some concerts. A few months later, he rang us, and fate, F-A-T-E is the big word, I believe, fate sent me in that direction. It was my hobby, it became my profession, and it was fun. Certainly the first few years, it was like a hobby, because I was in the London Symphony Orchestra, extremely busy, and it gradually snowballed, the quartet.
Mm-hmm.
I left the orchestra, and the quartet worked with more and more composers, and it just went on and on and on, getting a larger and larger activity until it became completely full-time.
Wow. So it was a very fluid transition, because I also thought if you're like one of the first or the first string quartet, it could be hard because people maybe are not so open to contemporary music and you're doing this wide thing. And
I think they were open because there weren't really other groups doing it. It was a barren ground.
Mm-hmm.
Boulez was famous for saying the string quartet is dead.
Wow.
And we revived it.
Certainly.
And he agreed that that was the case to me personally.
Aww.
Some years later, saying, well, of course, times have changed now with the Aditi Quartet.
Awesome. Awesome. So when you choose your repertory, how do you do that?
Well, it is a silence because we don't, I mean, there's many factors in choosing the repertory, and very often it's kind of to do with promoters, it's to do with, you know, composers we like and would like to commission, but we don't have. Well, of course, we have a kind of great say in it, but more often than not, it's to do with kind of what is being programmed in the season, what promoters want to hear, what you know, what is kind of in vogue at the moment, kind of that, all those things kind of come into consideration. And of course, there are composers that we, you know, love and really would like to kind of have new pieces from. Anything to add to that?
Well, in the beginning, it wasn't like that. In the beginning, I formed the quartet to play new music in England, because there weren't groups who took it really seriously. And I never dreamed we would become an international group, that people would write things for us. So I formed it to play Ligeti Quartet, Lutoslavski Quartet, in fact, a repertoire from the La Salle Quartet, upon whom I based concept of us playing and starting, doing it in England only. And soon that all changed after a few years and started to become international.
In fact, it was Jonathan Harvey, you know, wrote the first quartet for him.
Yes.
Amazing.
And I was very surprised that he wanted to.
Okay.
You want to write a quartet for us? Oh, okay then, I said. Something like that. And then it started with composers wanting to write pieces. And then one after the next continued with that, and one told the other, oh, they're good, they rehearse till we're satisfied, they're satisfied. And that's how it started,
mm-hmm.
Working with lots of different composers.
And what are the qualities you most appreciate in the composers you work with?
Integrity. Integrity to their styles, whatever the style is. A sort of intellectuality, a kind of cerebral music that also stimulates the mind as well as anything else that might flip around in your body. Music that is simple and can be easily discarded usually is not of interest to me.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. It's difficult to actually put it into words.
I think it's whatever the vision, if it's brought across convincingly, that's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, kind of, and I think the key word is integrity, actually. If you can hear that in a work, you know, if it's really, if it's got, the integrity is a great word for that, actually. We do appreciate that, and audiences can hear that as well.
And also when you look back over those 50 years and looking at the, like, new music scene and business, what changes have you experienced, or where did we go, how did it develop?
Well, I think 50 years, Irvin is the one who's got to answer that one. He's been there for 50 years.
Well, there were more key figures in the new music world. There were like Stockhausen, like Xenakis, like Ligeti, people that stood out. There was also the music coming from serial music, total serial music, these figures. And perhaps that has is less important now, although there are some good works written in that style. I think pieces that have less personality have been put on a little bit on the shelf now. That's not to say we don't play some of them, the better ones. And I think,
there's a broader spectrum of compositions these days, no? Kind of, it's much broader, kind of, the interest in contemporary music, which, you know, is a good thing.
I feel the sort of individuality of a composer like has become more important to them than belonging to a particular school of composition or thought these days.
Well, the thing is that the composers who were really interesting 50 years ago did have individuality, and the others perhaps didn't. People like Ligeti, Stockhausen, Xenakis they had their own individuality, and one was intrigued to listen to each new piece. At least I was in my late teens and 20s, or even before then, I was intrigued to hear the new pieces by these composers. And they had much personality. And I think today, we don't, as you said, we don't have the schools so much where things came from. But people have always been individual, but perhaps more so now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Freedom also, I think, plays an important part. People are freer now to do what they want. They don't have to fit into any category.
Yeah. And after having played so many pieces and so many techniques already, is there still something new with pieces that you're like, oh my God, this technique I've never done before, or something like that, where you were surprised?
I think techniques are not really important. They combine to make the accessories to play each piece or not, or maybe a piece is traditional and you only need things you learn at the conservatoire. I think personality, individuality, and integrity, and something that occupies your mind, your brain, your everything in order to play it, in order to listen to it, is what singles out good pieces.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting with techniques, because kind of there has been a build-up of other techniques on the instruments, of course, and these days kind of composers do have much more repertoire of kind of different sounds, how they are produced in the instrument, kind of, you know, the accumulation of all those years. And now kind of with the ease of use of electronics as well, that we're finding much more of that is being used kind of in compositions, and used well as well, used interestingly. But it's interesting because, you know, for our quartet we are very much kind of a very instrumental quartet. We like playing kind of music and so on, because it's something that we have control over. And very often, kind of, you know, with electronic sounds, we don't have so much control. We don't know how to control it, and that's another challenge, kind of, that we find more and more with pieces being written for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that was there from the very beginning, but of course electronics has become much more refined.
Mm.
But I remember playing in ensembles, playing quasi-improvised pieces and improvised pieces, like Dockhausen pieces, Plus Minus, and Aston Siebentagen text pieces. Mm. And we could be perhaps using similar techniques today in what we're playing here in Rainy Days. That hasn't really progressed. Electronics certainly has progressed enormously, live electronics.
Mm.
But the things were there. They were just used in a different way. Mm. And maybe that's true also of composition. It's changed, but it's very difficult to describe how it's changed. Mm. As I often say, you can't talk about music. Listen to it.
Yes. And you're playing as a string quartet, and I also have a listener in my audience. I mean, I have all the experts, I have young composers I also have, which I'm also very happy, people who are not so much in our scene, but curious, and they also then come to concerts. And what would you tell maybe a young composer or a person who's maybe not so familiar with what we're doing? What is so different to play like a string quartet and not whatever, the viola by your own, on your own, or what maybe are qualities you like also for composers to consider, that why do I write for a string quartet and not anything else?
Well, you know, string quartet, it's a loaded word because it's such a, you know, such a long tradition of playing string quartets. And some composers are actually afraid to write for string quartets.
Really?
Because, yeah, yeah.
It's like for voice, because some composers don't want to write for voice either.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, yeah, because there's so many great pieces already written for the string quartet. So, and, you know, they say it's the perfect combination, you know, for people, chamber music. I do find it very interesting because, you know, kind of, even though we're all stringed instruments, and we, you know, it's in a way it's quite similar, there's big differences in the instruments and the roles of the instruments within the string quartet as well. And it's a very strong energy when four people are kind of projecting something together. And that I find fascinating, playing string quartets, kind of this interaction of the energies, you know, how does it change during a concert, how does it come together kind of for the audience, how we project this kind of very intimate setting, very different personalities, kind of, especially in our group, we're kind of really four very different personalities, but somehow how we combine to kind of, as well as playing very individually, which is great for the music room for us, you know, it's kind of very individual, kind of, we all got kind of big parts, but we also project this kind of unity, which is actually very beautiful and interesting to witness actually from the outside, you know, this is a great strength from this unity of the string quartet. I don't know, I find it a fascinating form, kind of much more than a big orchestra, you know, then the energy is very different because you lose a little bit the individuality of each player. And within the string quartet, you've got both. You've got this kind of group thing and as well the very strong individuality mm-hmm. of each player.
It's just such a curious organism, you know, it's sort of like this. One of sort of great composers, and I'm sure Jordan will remind me which one it was, in his program notes, described it as sort of like the beast with 8 arms, four heads and 16 strings.
Cool.
And I think there's so much in this description because it's, in a way, because it's as an ensemble form, it relies on years of extensive togetherness, like in work and in playing and in sound. And yet it also like kind of has these four different heads, you know, that sort of each contribute something. And it's absolutely fascinating.
I would say it's having played in an orchestra, it's quite frustrating playing contemporary music in an orchestra. I mean, even if you're sitting at the front of it, I was concertmaster of the London Symphony Orchestra, and I actually hated to play contemporary music in the orchestra because it felt like things you were doing were just not heard. I mean, it's a completely different world in a string quartet where everything you do is heard. It's like playing solo.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I was never cut out to play new music in the orchestra.
And are there any dreams left for Arditi you would like to accomplish, or if there would be the nice woman who would say with her wand, I fulfill you a wish, what is left?
I always like nice women, but I think we've gone over all the mountains. We can only repeat it in different ways by the individuality of new composers, different composers. It's always interesting working with people you don't know also.
I think the dream is to kind of continue doing what we are doing, actually. You know, it's interesting because the quartet was awarded a lifetime achievement 20 years ago.
Oh.
The Siemens Prize, yeah. You know.
Yeah. And I had to make a speech. I didn't really prepare the speech, but I said I didn't know about this prize. So I asked what it was for, and they said, for lifetime achievement. And I said, hang on, I haven't finished yet.
And yeah. I think that's you know, our motto. You know,
it was actually 25 years ago.
Yeah, wow. It was before
yeah,
I joined.
99, so, yeah.
Yeah, we're here at Rainy Days, and now I'm curious, what are you playing tonight? Can you tell me a little bit about the program?
No, that's secret.
Secret?
Well, as this podcast is going out after the concert, everyone will know the secret. So why should we tell you about it?
Okay.
It's in the past, you see?
It's in the past, you're right.
Yeah.
So, do you want to say anything, or...?
Whose idea was it?
Whose idea was it? I can't remember. I think it was Stefan's idea.
No, well, you know, whose idea was Stefan? I mean, we had been floating his name for
no, the festival was interested in programming the piece. We had, our cellist had an accident.
I know, yeah. Because you're just three of you with yeah. me today.
On the way to the meal, usually the accidents happen on the way back from the meal when you've had lots of alcohol. But this accident happened on the way to the restaurant. And he fell over and broke his arm. And I don't believe it's possible to play the cello with a broken arm. I'm not even sure if he tried. But from the
well,
look,
let's hope he hasn't.
Let's hope he hasn't. But from the look on his face, just after he did it, he wouldn't do that. And we were supposed to play a piece that was commissioned here and in Wien Modern called Cyborg Flesh.
And what a prophetic title that has turned to be.
Absolutely. And when it was clear he was unable to do this concert, we put to the promoter that we could do a kind of improvisation by and playing parts of the piece in order to retrieve something, because they're, you know, this is not just quartet. We've got Yaron, guitarist, and Stefan doing electronics, and sound guy in the hall projecting everything. So it was kind of more than just a normal quartet concert. And because of the nature of the music, it was possible to retrieve some of the elements of the piece, not many, but some of them, because there are solos in the piece. Mm. And it was possible to do these solos, of course, without the cello solo. There's a solo for everyone. So we're playing those solos as part of what was constructed by Stefan mm-hmm. for this performance that will be tonight and was last Thursday. Which is today.
Oh,
I'm just confusing you and your listeners, if that's okay.
That's okay. They can see.
There have been a lot of sort of suggestions for a title for this version of the performance that were floating around. One of my favorites was Break a Leg. But eventually Stefan came up with this title that describes the project perfectly, Broken/Glued.
Mm. Was there before? Or
no.
Afterwards, okay.
No, yeah, we decided for this performance to, you know, do the title.
I don't think Stefan did a brilliant job of like, you know, gluing up sort of like the
elements of the piece
together. Yeah. So like, you know,
yeah, and you had to do it on a short notice. So.
And no prizes for what was broken, for working that one out.
No, I keep my fingers crossed that everything will be well again and he's healthy. And well, since this podcast is also very good in whatever, introducing contemporary music and finding maybe its way to it, if you don't know it. I'm also curious, do you think that there are still prejudices against new music? And if so, what can we do to change it?
Well, the answer to the first part of the question is definitely yes. And I actually don't think it's our responsibility to change it. I mean, we can do nothing except tell listeners, which I've been doing for years, to listen, come and try it.
And actually to, you know, perform the contemporary music as well as possible, which is what this quartet has been doing for 50 years.
And maybe stop operating with words like nice and ugly in primary music education.
Melody and harmony.
Yeah. And I also think that Rainy Days and Catherine Korns are also doing an amazing job here and how she includes audiences. And this is really great.
It's very important not to alienate audiences.
Yes.
And I find that actually real classical music goers can be really put off because they define things by beautiful and ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And other listeners, be it to jazz, to rock, to whatever there is these days and was in the days of the 20th century, that long, long gone century, people are more, can be more open to so-called contemporary music, whatever that includes today. And so it's not necessary, the people who have their barriers there and it's firm, their barriers are firmly up, I haven't got the energy to discuss with them that this is not interesting.
Mm.
I mean, I experienced many years ago in a cafe in Paris with Xenakis. He surprised me. It was raining. We went to a cafe, lots of condensation on the window, and we got wet running across the road in our break to have some coffee. And I said, oh, it's disgusting. Today it's really disgusting. And Xenakis said to me, no, I mean, it is beautiful. So for him it was beautiful because the heavens were opening and they were expressing something. And the way he liked his music played, a certain ugliness of sound, as it could be described by classical ears, was beautiful for him. And it suddenly opened my mind that, oh, he's talking, he's mirroring exactly the way his music should be played. He wasn't, I thought he was joking at first.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't. And so, you know, this is not something new about beautiful and ugly.
Mm.
And it's just important to have experienced that so long ago to understand, have some concept of how to play new music, what sort of sounds to produce, because we're not taught in the conservatoire that. So one has to find, I certainly had to find my own way in
that's
that.
Interesting, no, because the most appreciative audiences for us are either, you know, when you go to a contemporary music festival where people really already enjoy contemporary music, or people who actually don't have much of a musical education, they just come to listen to something without expecting something else. And that's kind of, you know, we've got amazing concerts and places that are very unexpected because you think, oh, they don't know anything about music, but that's great. They're just there to find out about music, and they really love because they're listening with open ears. They don't want to hear whatever Mozart sonata or something like that. So.
Yeah, it's interesting that sometimes we expect something. I have a old friend, and I always thought she would more like the classical music, and back then I sometimes sang classical music, and so I would only invite her to those concerts, and when it would get really crazy contemporary, I'm like, don't come. And at one point she just came by herself. She's like, I want to know here what she's doing. And she came to me after this concert like, I'm really mad at you. I really like this. I would have liked to listen to this earlier. And I'm like, I was completely wrong with my judgment about her.
It is so interesting. I mean, contemporary music, you know, you're listening to something completely new. It's just, what could be more interesting?
Yeah.
It's, you know, what, it's really wonderful, actually.
And the other thing I'm really curious about, it's more not about your whatever, who you are. I mean, you're doing many things, particularly playing this quartet, and I'm always curious how do you structure your day, or are you more structured or more flowy person, or do you have a kind of time management?
Well, many of our days are structured for us by the activities that we have to perform. So if we have concerts, we have to get on planes normally a large percentage of the time and be somewhere, and then we have to rehearse for those concerts, so then also some of us have to get on planes to be in those places in order to be there, and one has to be prepared to some degree for the rehearsal, so you have to take that into your planning. And so a large part of our activities are actually fixed, but we try to keep it as humane and as free as possible within those structures, within those conditions.
Yeah, our day is kind of apart from, at least for me, because I don't have anything else, apart from quartet, pretty free, which is really nice, actually. So, you know, kind of we have a very busy period, and then suddenly it's all free, and then the days are very unstructured, and then the next rehearsal batch coming up, so we start preparing, you know, for the practice and so on. But that's how that kind of works for me.
And do you have anything to kind of balance it out, or any whatever other interests or things that relax you?
Yes, sex and good food.
I think it was in Mexico like 10 or 15 years ago, like a friend of mine came back with a t-shirt from that festival that said sex, drugs and academic electronic music.
Sex, drugs and what?
Sex, drugs and academic electronic music.
Academic? Oh.
Electronic music.
That's what he had. Oh, that's what he did.
No, it said that on the festival t-shirt.
Oh, okay. Well, I just hope the music has become less academic now.
Well, I thank you so much for talking to me, and we actually got to our last question for today, and you can pick who wants to answer, or maybe you have more great tips for me. I would like to ask, which tip would you like to give a young artist?
Now is the time to go forward or turn back. Make your decision carefully. But if you can go forward, if you have a vision for the future, follow that path.
And everything else will follow from that.
Listen to what they tell you and take it with a pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Make your own choices.
Again, be true to yourself. Integrity.
Yeah, you touched that already. And
full circle, we must have finished.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, and I wish you a fantastic concert tonight or Thursday night a week ago or wherever we start this loop again. You can figure it out or look at the website at Rainy Days or the website of RDD, and you will find out everything. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.